Okay, let's call the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors to order, time being 9 o'clock, September the 9th. Steve Corona, would you lead us in the flag tonight, please?
Yeah.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we have some introduction of guests, please.
Yes, we have Christine Kimberling with MSSC here today.
Yes. Okay. And welcome, Christine. Nice to be here in Southern California. Okay. All right. This is the time and place for anyone wishing to do public comment on ENWD's jurisdiction that is not on today's agenda. Seeing no one raise their hand, and we have no speaker cards. We'll go to agenda item 2, which is recognitions. Jeff? Or actually, let me introduce first Christine Kimberly, who is actually out of Colorado. Can't remember which one, what city now. But she has been the executive director for the Multi-States Salinity Coalition for, I don't know, probably 6 to 8 years at this point, maybe longer. She really breathed some light into this organization, life into this organization, and I think Jeff would like to fill everybody else in on her accomplishments.
Yes, so I met Christine Kimberling when I first got involved with the Multi-State Salinity Coalition about 4 years ago, and Ron's known her about double that time. She is, again, the executive director for the MSSC. She makes the whole organization run, responsible for facilitating the annual summit, as well as all the planning committee meetings that go up into building the program for that summit. Matter of fact, I'll be going to Colorado here in October for one of those meetings. But she's just been great for MSSC, pulling it all together and keeping that organization up and running, and very positive individual. If you don't like Christine, you've got a problem. That's right. So with that, I will introduce Christine.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Ron, thank you, Jeff, for inviting me here today. It's my honor to be here, even if it's only for a minute. I've been involved with MSSC for about 8 years, and as most of you know, we're a nonprofit 501c3, and so we heavily rely on not only board members like Ron and like Jeff for their dedication and their knowledge and their support. We rely on sponsors, we rely on speakers, we rely on moderators to make sure we have a successful summit. Today, I'm not here to honor Ron, and I'm not here to honor Jeff. Today, I'm here to honor another person that is a big part of the MSSC. I'm here to honor Karen. So, can you join me, please? Just a prize to her, I think. So I'm here today to personally thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Our website, which is right behind you right now, set up, but our old website was set up about 15 years ago. We couldn't even post pictures to it. We couldn't post videos to it. And as I said, we rely on the support from our sponsors and everybody else to make sure that our little nonprofit runs. And so without the dedication of you and your hard work and your hours and the love you put into this website, it would have never gotten done. And so I'm here today to let you know, on behalf of Jeff and Ron and all of the board of directors from around the country, thank you so much for your dedication, your support. And we just wanted to present this to you just as a small token of our appreciation for what you do.
Thank you very much. I've enjoyed 27 years at EMWD and working with MSSC. It's also been fun. Aqua Region 9, Westcast, a lot of different organizations over the years. Thank you for a great place to work.
And thank you for your dedication. All right, with that, let's go to agenda item 3, which is executive reports.
Would you mind
Oh, sure. But to get a picture.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. Why don't you, Jeff? Just don't put it on the dashboard of your car. Thank you, Christine. Appreciate you coming out.
Morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. My written report's in your board package. I just have a few things I want to go over. We have a pretty exciting couple of weeks. On our legislation, SB 414, that bill was taken up in the Assembly Appropriations Committee on August 30th. That was the last day that bills could be passed through fiscal committees. What's interesting is we've really done a lot of work on the bill in the last few weeks, working with the state board, as well as other stakeholders to get the bill advanced. And it wasn't clear that there was support from the state board for the bill. They still have things they wanted to see changed, but we're really up against the deadline. The bill was put in the Appropriations Committee suspense file prior to this last hearing of the Appropriations Committee. And unfortunately, what usually happens, if you're in the suspense file, there is a consensus to move your bill forward from leadership. It usually basically is held in committee and means the bill is dead. Alternatively, the bill gets passed down and, of course, put to the floor. What was interesting with this Appropriations Committee is that there was 8 bills in the Appropriations Committee that were taken up from the suspense file. 4 bills passed out of the committee and onto the floor. 3 bills were held in committee, so those bills were dead. And in kind of a typical move, our bill was actually taken off suspense file and made a 2-year bill. The reason that's unusual is usually before you're put into the bill is not made a 2-year bill before it goes into the suspense file. It's not eligible to be made a 2-year bill. So it's kind of interesting. I think what it signals to us that there may be interest by the administration and or the leadership in the legislature of having this component go forward during the second part of the legislative session next year. And really, when we met with the state board and started to go through the bill, although we kind of didn't complete that review with them and they still had some outstanding issues, they seemed to genuinely express an interest in the small system water authorities and setting that up. So it gives us an opportunity to continue with the bill next year. We're going to do kind of a full evaluation. Lawmakers have indicated that with the passage of SB 200, which provides the funding for the failing water systems, next year they're going to turn their attention to implementation of that. So we expect to see some implementation bills, and that's maybe why this bill is being held over as a 2-year bill for next year. So we'll continue to work with the state board, the environmental justice advocacy groups, and others to see what we can do to continue to advance the bill forward. But we live to fight another day. And I think Danielle Coates has just done an outstanding job in really working with CMUA and others and our outside legal counsel support we have from David Elijah. It was really a great team that has kept the bill going. Under ongoing activities, between August 27th and September 2nd, yesterday, both myself and our human resources director hosted 10 all-employee town hall meetings. We did that at 6 locations throughout the district, and the purpose of that was to go over the results of the classification and compensation study. If you'll recall, in 2016, the board approved a labor memorandum of understanding with IBEW, and included in the IBEW MOU was completion of a class and comp study. In 2017, we started on that class and comp study, did a very, very comprehensive study. We had not done a classification and compensation study for over 10 years, so our classifications were a little bit outdated. But it was a full class and comp study that we completed. So we worked on that. We presented the results of the study to the employees, went through the methodology, how the comparisons were made, rather, on compensation. and answered questions and answers. We also posted the study on our intranet, which is our internal website. So employees had all the information that went into the study. We've done Q&As, and so really tried to give the employees very comprehensive information on this. IBEW represents about two-thirds of our employees here, and for us to implement the classifications and compensation study for the represented employees, it's a labor negotiation issue and therefore has to be approved by the union. The union leadership has decided it wants to put the results of the classification compensation study up for a vote of its membership for the recommendations. We feel that that vote needs to occur before we bring the item to the board for approval, primarily because if the union membership were to vote it down, our recommendation to the board would be to only implement it for the non-represented employees versus all the employees in the organization. And that would include the classification changes and salary adjustments that are recommended through the study. So at this point, what the schedule will be is on September 11th, the union will hold its vote, and then we will come back to the board on September 18th with a recommendation to the board. That recommendation will be to fund either the full implementation of the study for all employees or only the portion of that would apply to the non-represented employees. If that's approved by the board, we would do the adjustments to the classifications and salaries in October, because you have to reprogram payroll and do a number of different things. So I just want to give the board an overview of where we were on this. On groundwater replenishment activities, I'm really pleased to report that this year recharged a little over 11,000 acre feet in the San Jacinto Basin. We've actually recharged all of the Saboba settlement deliveries for the year 2020. So we just, by the end of this week, actually, we will hit that 7,500 acre feet of the 2020 deliveries. We've been in contact with Met. They want to continue to do deliveries, so we're advanced delivering into 2021. Jeff and his staff have done a great job of managing the recharge basins. We're getting very, very high recharge rates, and so we're continuing to put water in the ground. We're getting about 42.7 CFS of recharge. So we're very pleased with that, and we will continue to put water into the ground as long as it's available for Metropolitan. And I've worked with the Water Master and the other Water Master agencies because we are doing pre-deliveries, and so this is future year budgeted items for them, and we really have received good support to go forward with these deliveries at this time. So I'm very pleased with where we are on groundwater replenishment. And at the same time, we're also, again, putting water in our cyclic storage accounts. The way we're doing that is through an in-lieu delivery, so we're shutting down wells and accumulating that water in the ground. We're a little over 1,000 acre feet there as well since the beginning of August, and we started August 1st, and I think we're well ahead on that. So we're really getting a lot of water in the ground during this very wet year. I previously gave the board an email regarding the state's publication of the new notification levels for PFOA and PFOS, so I won't go into those specifically, but a couple of other things did come out of that release. First, the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, OEHA, they had prepared a study, the non-peer-reviewed study, that they used to recommend the notification levels. That's now been released for public review, so we have a consultant that we have retained along with the other four Santa Ana River watershed agencies to peer review that study. And also, interestingly, the State Water Resources Control Board formally requested OEHA to develop public health goals for PFOA and PFOS. That's kind of the next level of regulations, and public health goals usually just precede setting absolute maximum contaminant levels. So they've been asked to go to that next step. There's, I think, two states in the union that have MCLs for PFOA and PFOS. So I think we see this as an effort by the state to move forward very quickly towards setting maximum contaminant levels, and so we're going to keep an eye on that. As a board, there was recent media on this. Just to clarify, none of our wells and none of the water we're serving in our system is above the notification level. So we do have some trace levels of PFO and PFOA and PFOS on the water that comes out of the desalters, but those are below the notification level, so they're very, very minor amounts. So we are not required to do public notification. Finally, I want to talk about some good news on our turf removal program. We're going to come back with a full report to the board and the planning committee on this. But we had a couple of big projects that we were working on with the city of Hemet and at three sites located on Sanderson and Seven Hills Drive. Those sites have been completed now for turf removal. Just to give you an idea, those sites removed 176,000 square feet of non-functional turf. So it was we were really pleased with that. That brings kind of our non-functional turf removal total to 2.5 million acre feet in the entire service area. But we know we have a lot more work to do, and we want to come back to the planning committee and talk about kind of our next steps for the program. But this was a kind of big milestone project, and we did confirm that they've removed that and those projects are done. So with that, happy to answer any questions.
Yes, well, sir. Just on the PFOA, I may have missed it, but it'd be nice if we'd get maybe just a one sheet for the board that talks about what Eastern's doing or the fact that we have no contaminated wells or water.
April, we'll get it to you.
Okay, handy in my email. Just
absolutely. Yeah.
Occasionally we get asked on these things, especially when it's in the news. And so
yes.
That would be
yes.
Handy. Thank you.
Sure. Anything else on that? Thank you very much.
One item of interest, as you know, we have an ongoing brine concentrator demonstration project going on at the desalters. This is the desal tech facility, and we've had a lot of interest. We've showcased that pilot plant to a number of other agencies and interested parties. We're coming to the end of that demonstration effort, and pending the performance and the economics of that may be a viable solution for addressing the additional brine that will be discharged from our desalter expansion project, the Paris 2. Related to that, if that is the solution, the timing of bringing on a full-scale plant will be such that we'll need to acquire additional treatment capacity in the brine line for our additional brine discharge, and we've been exploring options, meeting with other agencies to see if there's a possibility of either leasing or purchasing some additional treatment capacity that they may have in excess. Tomorrow, Joe Muad and I will be meeting with SAPA and Orange County Sanitation District. They have a quarterly joint operations meeting, and we want to explore directly with Orange County San District what the opportunities are for acquiring some additional treatment capacity in their plant, maybe on an interim basis. So we're hoping that might be a potential option for us. So we're exploring all sorts of different options. We'll be meeting with their assistant general manager, Rob Thompson, and their financial officer, Lorenzo Tyner, to understand what their requirements are and what the options are for acquiring additional capacity. But it's important for us to resolve this with the Paris 2 coming online. We will have additional discharge, and we'll either resolve that with a brine concentrator or have the need to acquire additional capacity. So I just want to give you that update, and we'll report back as far as how those discussions go with Orange County Sand District.
Super. Okay. Thank you. Joe.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. One item to update you on the PFAS, PFOA front, as you recall, we entered into an agreement with the U.S. Air Force whereby Well 59, which is located immediately south of the March Air Reserve Base, was shut down. We are being compensated for the additional imported water. Recently, we completed the design for the wellhead treatment that is required to treat the PFAS and PFOA at the well. We put that out to bid, and we received bids last week. We are in the process of reviewing those bids. The low bid is, in fact, slightly below the engineer's estimate. We are sharing the bid results with the Air Force. We are hoping to come back to the board on September 18th with a recommendation to award a construction contract. And again, the construction will be funded by the U.S. Air Force.
Good. Jeff.
Yes, Mr. President, I just briefly want to update the board. If you recall, at the last meeting, I apprised the board of a leak on what's called the San Diego Pipeline Number 4. This is a pipeline that leaves the Skinner plant, goes to the very southern edge of Met's jurisdiction and into San Diego County Water Authority service area. The leak is about 5 miles south of Met jurisdiction line. The pipe is water damaged. I believe it's 88. Don't quote me on that. And so about at the point of the leak, it's about 300 PSI and only 25 to 50 gallons a minute. So it's a very small leak, but on a very critical piece of infrastructure. So San Diego County Water Authority has been devising a plan to shut down that pipeline in concert or conjunction with staff from Met and their member agencies. And of course, Met has reached out to MWD and asked us to participate and ensure that we can work with the salvage period as the pipeline is being repaired. So last Friday, there was a go-no-go meeting between Met and San Diego, which our staff was invited to attend. It was a conference call, actually. And they decided to go ahead and proceed with the leak repair starting on Monday, September 9th. So that pipeline is going to be down for a minimum of 10 days. And depending on what the major of the leak is, whether it's a pull joint or corrosion, whatever case, they're thinking the leak repair will take anywhere from 10 days to 2 months to complete. We've coordinated with Rancho California Water District in terms of Eastern's retail customer for zero impact and minimal impact to Rancho. They had to transfer the system around. This is where they take water now from a different EM connection from Eastern in lieu of that connection off the pipeline 4. So they're taking water directly right out of the back of the Skinner plant now. So pretty minimal impact to Rancho other than turning a few valves and kind of operating their system a little differently. The only other impact to Rancho is that they're postponing their cyclic storage program with Metropolitan until such time as these repairs are completed. But happy to report that it looks like it, on the whole, it's going to be minimal impact to Eastern and our current subagencies. That's all.
Good. All right. Got any other questions of staff? If not, let's go to agenda item 4, which is the consent calendar. We'll accept a motion and a second for approval for items 4A through 4I.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We'll go to agenda item 5, which is our action calendar. 5A is approve and authorize award of contract with H&H General Contractors Incorporated for $13,857,059 under specification 1361W.
Thank you. Joe Mwatt's going to present this item. We had a question yesterday from Director Rickard regarding economic analysis related to this, and so we've supplemented the presentation this morning. And so there's an additional information in the presentation on that, and so Joe will cover the overall presentation and the economic data that was requested.
Thank you, Paul. Good morning again. As the board is aware, the Mountain Avenue West replenishment basin is a key component of our water banking and constructive use program. This exhibit here presents the various components of that program. You see here, this is the location of the proposed replenishment basin. Associated with that program, we also have extraction wells, wells 201, 202, and 203. As you're aware, the drilling for those wells has been completed recently. We're in the final stages of well development for well 203. That well should be completed later this month, and we should be able to remove the sump wall around that property. Also, within this program, if needed in the future, we have secured property for treatment. However, based on the water quality we have analyzed thus far, from well 201 to 203, I'm sorry, 202, does not appear that a treatment facility is needed at this time. This exhibit represents the configuration of the proposed replenishment basin. Essentially, there will be a 36-inch pipeline that will bring water in this direction among the Lanez into an above-ground mechanical station, whereby the water is then diverted into a distilling basin. From here, the water is then conveyed split equally to two basins. This configuration is typical, allows us to remove one basin for maintenance and service if needed. Overall, this facility has a capacity to replenish the groundwater basin between 20,000 to 30,000 acre feet per year. As I'll get into later, that is a significant amount of replenishment capacity. Initially, as part of phase one, we will be using a lower amount of replenishment associated with this facility. And I'll get into those details and economics. This exhibit shows the proposed perimeter along the facility. We've worked very closely with the city of San Jacinto to develop a walking path along with drop tolerant landscaping. Ultimately, after improvement of the perimeter, this area will be dedicated to the city of San Jacinto, and they will be responsible for operation and maintenance of the walking path around the replenishment basin. We recently completed a design effort, put the project out to bid, and received multiple bids on the project. The low bid was in the amount of $13.8 million, about 20% below the engineer's estimate. And also, as you'll note here, several bids that were in very much close proximity to each other, which to us is an indication of not only a competitive bid climate for this type of project, but also clear, concise bid documents. So we're very pleased with the outcome of the bids. In addition to awarding the construction contract, we are also recommending that we award a contract to the engineer of record, UDAC, to assist us during construction in terms of review of submittals, RFIs, testing the start of the facility. There's also a number of wells, monitoring wells, around the facility, and this is to monitor any potential mounding of water as we do the replenishment. So during the construction of those wells, we will need to have hydrological services from DUDAC to assist us in monitoring the drilling. Overall, the contract with DUDAC is at $1 million. In terms of schedule, upon board approval, our intent is to issue the notice of proceed to the contract immediately. The construction duration is 485 days, and we will be updating the board accordingly as construction progresses. Mm-hmm. We'll also be working very closely with the city of San Jacinto on the hauling of dirt material. The contractor has indicated that one of the destinations for the excess material will be the Sepulveda Tribe. If you recall, they have the proposed horseshoe development where they need fill. So we're working with both the tribe and the city to make that happen. So as Paul mentioned, we want to present some additional details relative to the capacity of this program as well as the cost. This portion of the exhibit you've seen before, whereby we've looked at the pattern for hydrological years in the past, and we've used a model that would identify three wet years followed by four normal years and then subsequently followed by three dry years. And essentially, during the wet years, we have an opportunity to both put in water for banking, meaning long-term storage, as well as conjunctive use or put and take, where we put the water and we take it out subsequently in subsequent years, or possibly within the same year. That's what the green represents, whereby we would put the water and take it out that same year, and we would do that during the wet years as well as during the normal years. Obviously, during dry years, we wouldn't have that water available to us, so we did not assume any put and take operations during the dry years. With banked water or long-term storage, again, during the wet years, we would recharge that water, and then during the subsequent dry years, we would extract that water. We've modeled these scenarios, and essentially what this represents is the put and take is about 7,000 acre feet per year, as well as the bank water is 7,000. If you recall, last year, we did negotiate a storage agreement with the Water Master. And that storage agreement allows us to store up to 21,000 acre feet. That accounts for three consecutive years of banked water. In addition to that 21,000, we can do the put and take, which we can put in and take out that same year. So the reason I'm going over all this is to basically quantify the amount of storage that this facility is going to provide. I mentioned earlier that it can provide up to 30,000, but based on hydrological modeling, at least the first phase of storage, we anticipate to utilize it over a 30-year period at 149,000 acre feet, again, based on that 7,000 acre feet per year that I just described, and then long-term storage, about 63,000 acre feet over a 30-year period. I should maybe qualify that the 30-year lifespan is actually quite conservative. The sub-facility lifespan is typically more on the order of 50 years. But we want to be realistic, and we want it to be conservative in our estimates. So in total, this facility, at least for phase one, we will be able to utilize it for at least 212,000 acre feet of storage. So that's quantification of the storage. Now, when you look at the cost, as we just presented, the total cost of the Mountain Energy project, including the $4.3 million to acquire the property that was spent several years ago, we're at a total of $24.2 million. I mentioned the ongoing drilling of the wells. We still have to come back and equip the wells. In total, we estimate to be approximately $17.5 million. That brings the total program cost for phase one at $41.7 million. This is part of the SARCA funding grant, and there's $13 million available to us. Of that, 12.5 is towards infrastructure. The other remaining $500,000 is towards program management and conservation. So when you consider the grant funding we are receiving through SARCA, the total investment that we will be making is $29.2 million. You take that amount and you divide that by the 212,000 acre feet, that results in approximately a cost of $138 per acre foot for storage. Now, how does that compare? Well, we looked around other regional projects, and for example, Metropolitan Water District recently entered into an agreement with the Antelope Valley and East Current EAVAC project, which you've heard of. And for that project, they are estimating the cost of storage at anywhere between $300 to $320 per acre foot. Keep in mind, there's a significant economy scale for that project. It's a 280,000 acre foot of storage. So about 10 times what we're proposing here. And again, Metropolitan's estimating a cost of about $300 an acre foot. So we're more than half of that cost and able to realize local storage, which ultimately provides us reliability, resiliency during drought conditions, and that ability to mitigate impacts on our customers during shortage allocation. Beyond the economics, there's multiple other benefits that this program presents. There's linkages to our indirect potable reuse program, where ultimately we are planning to bring in a blend of highly treated purified water as well as Title II water and recharge at this location. So this facility is also going to serve as the means to recharge the groundwater basin for the IPR program. There's water quality benefits as well that we realize, and there's also an economic benefit. The put and take operation that I described earlier would allow us to bring the water from Metropolitan and avoid the treatment surcharge. Currently, that treatment surcharge is around $319 an acre foot. So when we put that untreated water in the ground and later extract it, there is a financial savings to the district. So we didn't necessarily want to get into all the specific details and linkages of all the benefits, but it is a multi-benefit project. Having said that, we recognize this is a major investment by the district. We are asking for $17 million today to advance the program. So we wanted to make sure you have all the information you need to. With that, I'll be happy to answer your questions.
Very good information. Just exactly what I was looking for, and there are multiple benefits, I agree. I mean, we know we got to have places to put water when it's available. And groundwater is, I mean, there's no evaporation here, correct? When we serve this water, it's minimal treatment, right?
Disinfection.
So it makes perfect sense. It's just when you look at the dollars, it kind of jumps out at you, but
you know, I think one of the other benefits Joe pointed out in what we're seeing, and I think really, which is pleasantly surprising, is the extraction wells are looking like they will produce at a much higher level than we originally assumed. Also, the recharge facilities, and because of the configuration of the pond, where the permeable sands are, we're thinking that we will have substantial recharge capacity over and above what we assumed in this economic analysis. So we showed the put and take operation plus the the long-term storage operation, but there will be additional capacity that this first phase of ponds will provide for things like the IPR project. So the economics look just at that, and they're still very favorable, but there is capacity both on the put and take side that we're really pleased with the site, the location, and what we're seeing out in the field.
Great. I'll move the item. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We'll go to agenda item 5B, which is approve and authorize contract amendment with Jacobs for $285,604 for wells 201, 202, 203 drilling and the hydrologic construction management services.
Good morning, President.
Good morning, Brian.
Members of the board. Speaking of groundwater wells for our water banking program, this is regarding wells 201, 202, and 203. This is the same site image that Joe presented a moment ago. And these are the three wells that have been drilled and are currently being wrapped up in terms of the drilling construction effort. So in terms of background, these wells are production wells that are part of our Enhanced Recharge and Recovery Program, or what we call ERRP. This first phase has also received funding through the SARCUP program. And then we've tested wells 201 to date at 2,600 GPM and well 202 at 2,000 GPM, which, as Paul mentioned, was above what our original estimates were. But we're really glad to see the production capacity that we're getting out of these wells. So the reason that we have this presentation is that while the construction activities are within the limits that we gave the contractor doubled up on a lot more work than we anticipated in order to complete his work within our schedule. And that required our hydrologic consultant to have to double up on their staff for a number of the activities during construction. And that was related to the drilling and the reaming activities taking longer than originally estimated. The time spent conducting the isolated zone aquifers took longer than expected. And then the mechanical and pump development took longer than expected as well. So even though the contractor's finishing within his allotted time, because he doubled up, Jacobs also had to double up their staff, and it required more labor hours for them than originally estimated. One change the district did make was to reduce the construction hours from 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. For certain activities, we were able to reduce that to just daylight hours for 7 days a week for part of the activities, and so that also required some additional time on Jacob's part, mainly being able to man activities just during those hours rather than having people that would be there 24/7. In terms of the contract amendment, we met with Jacob's staff and negotiated the final amendment number 2 amount. This did include elimination of one of the aquifer zone testings on well 203. We felt that we had obtained enough good information from the first two wells that we were able to eliminate this third one at a cost savings to the district. And that also reduced the amount of this amendment. Looking at the project budget, there's plenty of money allocated to the project. So the only thing we're asking for is to authorize the GM to amend approve amendment number 2 in the amount of $285,604, bringing the total agreement amount with Jacobs to $943,208. So if there's any questions.
And these costs were included in the previous economic analysis?
Yes.
Any questions? If not,
I'll move it.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. We'll go to agenda item 5C, which is approve and authorize an agreement with Corollo Engineers for $574,629 for the final design of the San Jacinto Regional Water Reclamation Facility Plant 1 Rehabilitation Project and the appropriation in the amount of $730,629.
Good morning. Thank
you. Good morning, Eric.
So presentation this morning includes some background on the San Jacinto site project. We propose a scope of work for a consultant, a schedule, and a recommendation to board. The aerial photograph that you see in the bottom of this slide highlights the operating area of the San Jacinto Regional Water Reclamation Facility, and the area highlighted in yellow is the Plant 1 location that was constructed around the 1960s era. If you recall back in 2013, we completed the San Jacinto Plant 2 expansion project, and we brought the Plant 2 area online. That area is highlighted in blue on this slide. And the area that's highlighted in yellow in Plant 1 was shut down at that point in time. There was a lot of maintenance activity that needed to be done on that site. Plant 2 had adequate capacity, and we were able to actually divert flow from that service area over to the Paris treatment plant, which had a lot of capacity as well. So for many years, we've left the Plant 1 out of service. As back in February of this year, the board authorized a contract for Corolla to perform a preliminary design for rehabilitating Plant 1. And part of that effort was to do a condition assessment. I want to point out a couple components of Plant 1. On the photo on the left, you see rectangles that are green, red, and blue. The green rectangles are the primary clarifiers. There are five of them. The red area is the aeration basin, which is a part of the treatment process for Plant 1. And the blue area rectangles are the 11 secondary clarifiers that comprise the components of the Plant 1 secondary treatment process. During the condition assessment, it was noted that most of the equipment, which was installed around the 1960s era, was pretty corroded and damaged and needed to be replaced. You'll see some photos on the right to kind of indicate some gates and valves are in the wrong position, as well as some significant corrosion and replacement needs for mechanical equipment in each of those rectangular basins. Again, in the primary clarifier, there's five of them, and the secondary clarifier, there's 11. Each one of those requires a full complement of equipment.
So when you say a history of operational challenges, how far back is that?
That goes quite a bit far back. One issue is rectangular clarifiers in general. And the way that the flow of the plant goes through the facility, you can see that the primary clarifiers start on the top right.
I get that. I just wonder how far back the operational challenges go, like 10 years, 20 years?
I would say more than 10 years.
Okay.
That plant has been well maintained and operated, but I think the challenge with maintaining it was a pretty big challenge for the operations staff.
Okay.
This slide shows some photographs of both the new facilities and the older facilities. On the right are two photos from Plant 2. And on the left are two photos for Plant 1. The top photos are primary clarifiers, and I want to point out a couple differences between the Plant 2 facilities and the Plant 1 facilities. Plant 1 is rectangular clarifiers. Again, we have five of them. Each one of them requires a full complement of equipment. On the right, you see the Plant 2 circular clarifiers. There's only two of those. So if you rehabilitate the Plant 1 equipment, you end up with seven secondary clarifiers. And if in the bottom, you look at the primary clarifiers. If you look in the bottom, you have the secondary clarifiers. You have on the left, the Plant 1 photos, you have 11 secondary clarifiers. And on the right, you see a photo of the new secondary clarifiers installed for Plant 2. There are three of those Plant 2 secondary clarifiers, and there are 11 Plant 1 secondary clarifiers. Each one of those requires a full complement of mechanical equipment. As we did this condition assessment, we identified there was a significant cost to bringing the equipment for the primaries and secondaries into operation. Corolla proposed an alternative. And the alternative involved taking advantage of the capacity that was provided in the Plant 2 facility and removing from operation the primary and secondary clarifiers associated with Plant 1. And what you see in Corolla's proposal is a project where we take the two primary clarifiers, interconnect them with the Plant 1 process, and the three secondary clarifiers from Plant 2, and you're connecting with the Plant 1 process as well. So now we have a project that involves yard piping instead of a lot of mechanical process equipment inside several basins. When we're done with this, the operations staff will have a facility with a lot less mechanical equipment that needs to be maintained. The result of this is a project that I think is far more efficient to deliver. It's also significantly reduced cost, several million dollars. So from that advantage, we propose to move forward with the project that removes from operation the primaries from Plant 1 and the secondary clarifiers from Plant 1 as well. As you may recall, Corolla was awarded the preliminary design contract back in February of this year after a very competitive selection process. I believe we had eight proposals at that point in time. Corolla won that based on their value-added approach for the preliminary design,
And I think that they've continued to show that during the delivery of this particular project. We negotiated a fee with them for final design services. Final design services came in at roughly about $575,000. And they include the rehabilitation design for Plant 1, the construction phase and sequencing, safety pre-use analysis, bid document preparation, construction cost estimate, and construction schedule. Our proposed schedule for this project, again, we're approaching you today for consideration of award of a final design contract. And we would like to be able to issue a notice to proceed this month. It will take approximately about a year to finish the final design. Looking to advertise the rehabilitation project toward the end of next year. And what we're looking to do is to achieve a schedule that coincides with other projects that the district has moving forward that would need the water from this facility and put into pure water replenishment project. So the operation of the plant would begin in service around April of 2022. Our recommendation to the board, award of the final design engineering service contract for all, in the amount of $575,000, and an award of services needed to complete the final design, and appropriation in the amount of $730,629 to complete the final design. Thank you. Any questions?
Do you have any questions of Eric?
So, can you tell me why? Would you attribute the operational challenges to? Was it the design?
I think there's a couple factors. One is the equipment was aging. We've had airlines out there with perforations in them that were leaking that had to be repaired. We've had a design that seems to show a flow pattern that kind of varies through the facility without considering, I would say, optimal hydraulic design. If you look at the rectangular layouts that are out there in the flow channel, it's difficult to get appropriate separation of biomass through that facility of secondary clarifiers. We have a lot of solids to give to individual secondary clarifiers except for all of them. The new designs for circular clarifiers are much more symmetrical, and they actually are a superior cost.
If I could add a record to kind of to the heart of your question. The old plant has a common influent channel to every single rectangular basin there. And so if there's one gate that needs to be maintained, that entire channel has to be shut offline and you have to bypass your flow to all of the subsequent basins. So you're building a really large manifold system just to work on one gate. So that's common. There's, I don't know how many gates, Eric, 30 or 40 gates. Then that kind of scenario. There's some other gates that in one of the photos is a crossover gate for when 30 years ago they thought they may operate the plant as an alternative in a step feed mode, which is a whole different operation. The plant has always operated in a blood flow mode, so there's a gate there that's not operational. It's just been left in that position closed because it didn't need to be open for any reason. But again, a lot of the challenges with the basins and the common channels, inlet and outlet channels, both have precluded a lot of the maintenance activities that we would like to conduct on those structures.
Jeff, when was Plant 1 designed?
So Plant 1, I think, goes all the way back into the mid-60s.
And it's just not contemporary design standards.
Okay.
You just don't.
Well, yeah. So that's kind of my point. I mean, yeah. I get the impression that it was designed 10 years ago, but that's not the case.
No, it was designed 30 years ago.
The challenges have been for the last 10 years, right?
Exactly.
Okay. That's an
important distinction. So starting with, like, two clarifiers on the primaries, one or two iteration based on that. Don't quote me on these today. It's not much of those plants. But it's been expanded in modules. The last basin construction occurred when I started my career back when I think it was wrapping up in 1990. So I remember that being under construction when I was a plant checker way back in 88. So,
okay.
And numerous other projects.
Yeah, but I think your point's well taken. And this is very common in the industry. You see the general design standards, you know, being changed over time to be more operator responsive. You know, minimal mechanical equipment for maximum capacity, because it's more responsive to, you know, contemporary and long-term operation and maintenance. And as Jeff pointed out, the plant was laid out 30 years ago and then it subsequently expanded. It wasn't that it was a bad design at the time. It was just the design standard at the time. And it's kind of interesting how the whole industry has really evolved.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a staff recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously. With that, we'll go to receive and file. Have a motion. Unless we have any concerns on the receive and file.
I'll move the item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Okay. With that, we'll go to agenda item 8, which is the calendar review.
Good morning, President Sullivan, and members of the board. I have one new event for your consideration. The City of Menifee will be holding its State of the City address on Thursday, September 19th at 8 a.m. Director Sullivan is planning to attend. We do have a table as a sponsor for this event if anyone is interested in attending. Thank you.
I'm sure we'll fill the table.
Thank you. On page 2 of your calendar report, you have the board's master calendar for the next 2 weeks. Beginning with tomorrow, September 5th, we have the board's administrative committee meeting at 7:30 a.m. for Directors Qualley and Sullivan. Immediately following, Director Sullivan has an update with the general manager at 9 a.m. The joint Inland and Orange County Caucus meeting will be held at IEUA at 11:30 a.m. for Director Meckert. And the Municipal Water District of Orange County's Water Policy Forum and Dinner will be held at the Westin South Coast Plaza at 5:30 p.m. Directors Polly and Sullivan are scheduled to attend. And we do have two additional seats available for anyone interested. On Monday, September 9th through Tuesday, September 10th, the Metropolitan Water District will hold its board and committee meetings. Director Record will attend. On Monday, September 9th, Director Sullivan will attend the Water Reuse Symposium.
I will not be able to attend that. I have another pressing obligation.
Okay, thank you. I'll remove that from the calendar. On Monday, September 9th as well, we have the WRCOG Executive Committee meeting in Riverside at 2 p.m. on Director Slauson's calendar. Thursday, September 12th, Director Corona is scheduled to attend the Rancho California Water District Board meeting at 8:30 a.m. And Director Record is scheduled to attend the Santa Ana Watershed Ambassador Program workshop. He will be speaking. That event will be held here in the EMWD boardroom at 11 a.m. And on Thursday, September 12th as well, Director Record has an update meeting with the General Manager at 2:30 p.m., followed by the Board's Planning Committee meeting at 3:30 p.m. for Directors Corona and Record. On the evening of September 12th, the Winchester MAC will meet at 6:30 p.m. for Director Pauley. On Saturday, September 14th, Western Science Center will be holding the Science Under the Stars event at 5 p.m. We have Directors Polly and Sullivan scheduled to attend. We do have additional seats available for anyone who would like to attend. I understand it's a great event, and the district supports this event annually. On Sunday, September 15th, Director Slauson will attend the Moreno Valley Hispanic Chamber El Rito event that will be held at Moreno Valley College at 4 p.m. And this, again, is a district sponsorship. On Monday, September 16th, Director Polly has an update meeting with the general manager at 7:30 a.m. And as well, Director Polly has the County Style Executive Committee teleconference at 11 a.m. on the 16th. Tuesday, September 17th, the SAPA Commission will meet in Riverside at 9:30 a.m. That's Director Sullivan's calendar. And we have a special Operations and Engineering Committee meeting at 3:30 p.m. on the 17th, and that's for Directors Slauson and Sullivan's calendar. Moving to page 3, we have future events listed that the board will be participating in. As I mentioned, you do have seats available for several events. Please review this list and let me know if you're interested in attending. The upcoming board meetings are all on schedule. As listed, the committee meetings are also listed. And just a note, you'll see no Austin Engineering Committee meeting listed in red. just because the normal date falls on Thanksgiving. So we're proposing moving that meeting to Tuesday, November 6th at 3:30 p.m. And that's for Director Slauson and Sullivan.
So, Nicole, for now, why don't you put me down as not attending the September 18th board meeting?
Thank you.
Does anybody know what the Santa Ana Watershed Ambassador Program is?
Yeah, I mentioned it at the last meeting. I had a handout. There are, I think, three different dates. All-day events and water leaders are presenting discussions about the Santa Ana watershed, as well as probably environmental groups and such.
So it's put on by SAPA?
Yes. Oh. Well, I don't know. No, it was put on by the California. Remember, I mentioned this at the last meeting. California. It's a California agency that pays for these.
Okay.
For outreach.
All right.
And then I forgot.
Yeah.
All right.
We can
and you could ask Rich Hollow.
Yeah, well, no. I'll ask.
We have an email from the organizer that I can forward to you to share.
Sure. No, I'm just curious. So, okay. If it was being sponsored by SAPA.
And if there are no questions or any further additions to the calendar, that will conclude my report. Thank you.
On the November 28th ops meeting, so the ops hearing on Thanksgiving,
yes.
Can we call in on that one?
We'd like to move that one to the 26th or another date if that works better.
That's what you're saying, okay.
All right.
Just as well.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. With that, let's go to each individual director's meetings. Director Polly.
Sure. I had a good update with the general manager. there's issues with the district. Riverside County Water Task Force, I thought the last presentation on the PFOA and PFAS was just outstanding, getting a good panel there. So a nice job for the group, including Paul, to put that together. Him and San Jacinto Water Master, we did have an update on potential assessment increases coming to all the members. We'll have a further discussion on that at the next meeting in November. And then also, it's not on the list here, but I also did attend the Moreno Valley State of the City, Director Slauson, and that was an outstanding event. I thought the mayor did a great job of giving the State of the City. And that's my report.
Okay, Director Record.
Just meeting that we were just talking about, the coordination call for the district and watershed.
Okay. Director Slauson.
Yes, I also attended the state, Moreno Valley State of the City, and as Director Pauly said, it was a good event. And yes, he did mention the mayor did a great job. Had my update with the city, with the general manager. I always appreciate that. And just getting a little more detailed information. The Riverside County Water Task Force, again, as Director Polly said, it's great to keep us informed, and I appreciated that. The Moreno Valley Chamber of Commerce breakfast, one of the speakers was Congress member Mark Ticano. He did well, and enjoy talking to him a little bit afterwards. That's it.
Okay. With that, I did attend the Water Task Force meeting, which I thought was an excellent briefing by the speakers. I enjoyed very much the comments and speech by Mike Marcus from Orange County and, what their state-certified lab does. Also, I did attend the video filming for my appearance. That'll be on video for the State of the City for Menifee. And yesterday's Santa Ana Watershed Project meeting, we just went over the renovation that's being done inside the building and the commission hearing chambers. We did approve a lease of the brine line so that Chino Basin has some ability to put some of their brine into the line on some of their repairs, which I think was great for not only Sapa but for Chino Basin. We did rearrange $1.2 million of the SARCUP monies to be better utilized so that we don't lose them to the state, and that we did approve staying with an in-house counsel and also approved the ability to use an outside counsel when required. That was it. Okay. With that, let's take, counsel, we have need for a closed session.
Yes, sir.
And you cite whatever it is, and then we'll take a 10 or 15 minute break before we do closed session.
Great. As identified on the agenda for the meeting, closed session for two agenda items. One regarding exposure litigation under Government Code 5.95649, and the other annual performance review GM under Government Code 5.95.
Great. Let's take a 10 or so minute break.